Okay, everyone. Well, thank you for joining this Fulbright webinar today. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout the competition cycle on a variety of topics, and today we'll focus on how to complete the application. My name is Catherine Matto, and I work on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program as the Application and Selection Lead. And over the course of this webinar, I'll briefly introduce you to the essentials of applying to the Fulbright U.S. International Education Administrator Seminar Program, and I'll spend some time in the application with you. Please note that I'll be focusing on the nuts and bolts of the application system rather than helping you to select an award and prepare your application materials. I hope to answer many of your questions during the webinar, and there will be some time for Q&A at the end. If you have any questions, you're welcome to use that questions box to submit them at any point during the webinar. I'll try to answer them throughout, but I may need to hold some until the end. We'll also be posting a recording of this webinar on our website for your reference in the coming days. Okay, so the Fulbright program was established in 1946 by a junior senator from Arkansas by the name of J. William Fulbright to promote mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and the people of other countries of the world. So for more than 60 years now, the Council for International Exchange of Scholars, or CIES, has helped to administer the Fulbright Scholar Program, which is the U.S. government's flagship academic exchange effort on behalf of the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. We work in concert with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad on program administration. The Scholar Program in general is comprised of several different kinds of opportunities. Today, I'll focus on the application for those awards to, or rather for, international education administrators to participate in a seminar in one of our participating countries, so India, Taiwan, Russia, Japan, Korea, France, or Germany. And if you didn't catch all of those, we'll take a look at the awards catalog and you can see a little bit more information there. In terms of eligibility, for all of our applicants, for all of our U.S. programs, U.S. citizenship is required by the time of application. As you explore the opportunities within the IEA program, you'll find nuanced differences in the requirements for each. So before applying, you should carefully read the eligibility requirements for the program and the award to which you're applying to ensure that you're eligible. So what's the process? Well, you, the applicant, come up with the location among the countries that are offered and decide on which one is the best fit given your background, your expertise, and what's going to be a good fit for your home institution. Then you work on your application materials and you apply for the program. And then your application goes through the review process. It's a peer review process and selection process, and we'll talk about that later on in the presentation. And then with any luck, you'll be up and away and on to your seminar experience. So in terms of finding that award, the catalog of awards is where we host or house all of this information about the individual opportunities for each country. And it's really the first place you want to look when considering an application. These awards contain information describing the grant activity, the parameters, like the timing and how long it's going to be, the qualifications necessary, and any other pertinent details. Each of the countries that participates in Fulbright is a partner in the process. This means that they write the awards in collaboration with us and the U.S. Department of State. The awards represent the host country's interest or needs that could be served well by a Fulbright scholar. The number and structure of awards varies by country. This is why we don't have these wonderful seminars in all of the countries that we offer scholar grants to, because it's a much more selective program in terms of the number of countries that we partner with on this. So it's a much smaller group of countries. So how do you find an award? Well, let's flip over to the awards catalog, and we'll take a look. So this program is specifically for administrators, and so I've already navigated to our homepage, and I'll show you a little bit more about what this means. So if you go to our homepage, you can go to browse the awards catalog, and then that will take you to the awards catalog. So what I usually do to find the seminars is I go to the advanced search and then click on the activity, which is seminar, and then search awards. So this will result in 7 awards being listed. You can switch it over to list view so you can see all of them more easily in one screen. So, for example, I'll open up the one in India. I'm going to open it up in a new tab so I can keep that list open. And so here we have more of the information about the seminar in India. So there's approximately 10 grants. This is open to higher education administrators. A terminal degree is not required for any of our seminar programs, which is great because many of us administrators do not have that terminal degree. And you can also see more about the actual program. So in this case, the India program lists more information here for their seminar, where it's really an opportunity for you to become much more familiar with the higher education system of the host country, in this case, India. So what they'll do in this case is it's a two-week grant starting in March of 2020. The locations will vary by country and by year. In this case, they'll start in New Delhi and then go to usually a couple of other cities to see more of the breadth of higher education in India. We have more information about the disciplines here, so it's really for those who are in higher ed administration. And specifically, when I turn over to the award requirements tab, you'll see in the applicant profile that there are additional criteria needed to be met to be eligible for this seminar. So in this case, you know, it's not only you have to be a higher ed administrator, but you also need to meet these specific criteria. So you would need to be either an international education administrator or a senior level administrator. You need to be employed by a U.S. higher education institution, and it goes on. I won't detail all of this for all of the different awards, but wanted to highlight where to find this information. Now, each of these is a little bit, as I said, it's nuanced, those differences between the awards. So if you're thinking about applying for this one, it's pretty open in terms of, you know, people can be foreign student advisors all the way up through provosts and presidents of the university. So it's pretty broad in terms of who is eligible and qualified for this award. And we've seen that in the selections as well, that those who are selected really come from a variety of different parts of the college or university. And so each of these awards is going to be a little bit different in terms of who their kind of target participant is. So thinking about the others, you'll want to pay attention to what level. You know, in this case, it's showing that it can be, you know, foreign student advisor, it can be a president. Others may be a little bit more limited. Others may have more information about it. Doesn't have to necessarily be in specifically international education, like a foreign, you know, foreign student advisor or study abroad advisor. It might be in the area of career services, and then it's your job as an applicant to make the case to explain how it's connected to international education. So the other piece here is that they're describing further, you know, that you need to be in a position of decision-making, that you have decision-making authority with substantial responsibility for enhancing the international dimension of the institution. And again, this varies a little bit, of course, depending on the role that you're in and depending on your institution. So that's where, again, taking a look and reading these pieces carefully, each one is going to be a little bit different. So let me show you another award just for comparison. Let's see. Our Taiwan award is another one that's coming up with a deadline this summer. And if you're listening to this after the summer, I'll, you know, definitely take a look at the others. But here, for Taiwan, they have a little bit more information in terms of what kinds of roles, and they really are highlighting that substantial responsibility for enhancing the international development, or rather dimension, of their campus. So each of these is going to be a little bit different. So there's only seven of them. One of them is specifically for those at community colleges, which is great. That's the award to Russia. The others, as far as I'm aware, are all very much open to administrators who are at community colleges, which is one of the nice things about this program, is that it's really open. And we've seen that, again, in our selections of for those who are actually selected for these grants and get to participate in them. So you might be wondering, okay, so that's great. How do I see who's participated in them? And how do I know if I might, you know, look like one of them? So if we go back to our homepage and go to our scholar directory, you can click on here and then click on US Scholar and then select Seminar. And then you can click on Search. Now you can use the advanced filters. So if, for example, you wanted to search by a particular institution, so say you are in Framingham, it'll take just a minute for the search results to pop up. It's thinking, but it's going to pull up the results for your search. And then you can click into one of these results, or you can search maybe not so much by the institution, but maybe you search by the country. So maybe you search by Germany, which is one of our participating countries. And then you can click search. And here we go. So here you can open up any of these number of alumni directory pages. And then you can click in to see a little bit more about the scholar in this case. We don't provide contact information for our scholars for privacy reasons, but chances are pretty good you're able to Google them and find their contact information and reach out in the time it has taken me to explain that. So that's another great resource for you to think about. Okay, so what is my background? Is there an alum who has a similar background? So going back to our awards catalog, again, there's 7 different awards. Take some time, you know, if it's helpful, some scholars and some alumni have reported printing off the pages and literally putting them out on the table and comparing them to see which one makes most sense. Talk with your administrators, your senior administrators, to see, you know, what might be the best fit for the institution and the goals and the plans going forward, that may be a useful conversation to have to make sure that it's a really appropriate fit for the institution. So the other part of the page that I wanted to highlight before we move on is just off of our homepage, and you can also find all of this information when you go to US Scholars off of Programs and then click on IEA Seminars. And that I'll show you a little bit more about this in a little bit, but wanted to let you know that that's kind of like the program homepage in here. So let me move that over, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. Let me switch back over to the PowerPoint part. So we've talked a little bit about how to find an award. Again, using that advanced search function to find the awards that are open to seminars under that grant activity is the easiest way to go about it, especially for countries like France where there's a lot of different awards. It's a much quicker way to find those awards. So you may find that there's more than one that's a good fit for your background and your experience and your interest. So you may want to reach out to my colleagues for more guidance on choosing the award. But really, I'd spend some time talking with your administration as well and have that be a really open discussion to see which might be the best fit overall. My colleagues are also helpful with that. But really, it's up to you as the applicant to determine where you want to apply. So once you have chosen that award, you need to start putting your application together. So let's go over to the application page in just a sec. So this is the link to our application itself. You'll need to create and activate an account. If you've applied for a Fulbright previously, you may notice that the application looks different and that you need to create a new account, and that's because it is a new application this year. Okay, so from that awards catalog, if I wanted to go in to apply for the Japan Award, for example, you can use that Apply Now button that will take you to the application tab of that IEA homepage on our website, and then you can click on Application. Now, that will take you to this tab where it says, you know, log in to continue an application or create an account. If this is your first time applying for Fulbright, or even if it's not, you'll still need to create an account. So go ahead and follow the steps through there. You'll need to create a PIN, and then you'll be able to work on your application. So sometimes we're asked what browser you might want to use. We generally encourage you to use Google Chrome, although I've been able to use the application successfully in basically any browser I've tried. But just make sure that you have the application open only in one tab on your browser. Don't open it in multiple tabs. That can make things kind of wonky for you. You can also work on it over a number of days or weeks. Your entry should automatically save as you proceed through it. It also should be fairly intuitive to use. That said, we do ask that you read those questions and those prompts and instructions carefully before submitting the application. The application does contain fields that you're required to complete, and we've identified these with an asterisk in the application itself. If they're not completed, you'll be reminded to complete them before being allowed to submit the application. There's a final page in the application that basically checks to make sure all those required fields are filled in. So you may be prompted to go back to double check one of those if it's been left empty. So there are a few pages where you'll upload documents like your statement of intent and CV, and you'll want to be mindful of the page limits and other formatting and content guidelines for each of those documents. So let's jump into this application. So I've already logged in over here, so I'm going to open that application and open. Okay, so here's our welcome page for the application. We have a lot of information here, so take your time and read through that on your own time. I'm going to kind of jump right into this next page in the interest of time. So we have a couple of preliminary questions. First is whether or not you've completed a previous scholar grant in the last 2 years. If you have, if I were to select yes, you'll see that there's a message saying, I'm sorry, but there's actually a two-year waiting period now between the end of the final grant and the next time that you can apply. So chances are that probably doesn't apply right now. But something to keep in mind. And it also asks you if you're a U.S. citizen. So if you're not a U.S. citizen, you'll want to check out our visiting scholar program for Fulbright. And if you are, you'll go ahead and click yes. So then for the program, you'll click on Fulbright International Education Administrator Awards, and then you'll hit continue. And then from here, you'll want to select an award. So I had used this application for a prior example. So in this case, Ecuador is not an option. So let's pull up the option. So let's take India. India has our first deadline of the year coming up in August. And then we'll select the appropriate award. So this will prompt you to choose the right. It'll make you choose. Hopefully you'll choose the right one that's the right match for you. But we ask that you double check that. We also will provide a link to the award itself within the application, so you'll have easy access to that. Okay, so that takes us over to our personal information page. And you've noticed probably that I keep on hitting continue at the end of the bottom of the page. You can totally jump around the application and, you know, complete it in bits and pieces. That's fine. All of the data should save as you move around the application. The continue is really just to continue on to the immediate next page. But you're welcome to, as I said, you're welcome to jump around. So the personal information, we already completed the award details. The personal information asks you to complete some fairly standard biographical information in here. So scrolling down, there's some citizenship information. You'll want to complete that information. If you have citizenship with another country, then I would be sure, first of all, to enter that information here. But we have selected India for our country for the application. You'll want to note that some countries have a requirement that you can't be a dual citizen with that country. India, in this case, is not one of them. But there are a handful of countries where that is something to be mindful of, where you can't be a dual citizen with the country that you're applying to. So something to be aware of. Let's go back over to that application. So here, let's see, if we were a dual citizen, we would select this. If you were a naturalized citizen, you would select yes and enter your naturalization date to the best of your knowledge. Enter information about if you've had a prior felony or misdemeanor, and then the optional race ethnicity question. So that takes us through the first page of real, you know, information that you're actually entering, and that takes us to the contact information. So this is, again, pretty straightforward. This is your permanent address to start with, and you'll find that countries appear first in the address box, which may not be the most intuitive, but will actually allow the question to then be adjusted as needed. So if by chance you were living in Taiwan at the time, it would adjust automatically. Now, I think most of you will be applying from the U.S., so that should be hopefully a moot point, and you'll go ahead and enter all of your permanent address information. Now, if your current address is not the same as your permanent address, you have an opportunity to enter that here as well. We also have, okay, so let's bring it back to the United States, and then we can scroll down the page. Okay, we have telephone numbers and email. We do encourage you to provide a secondary email address that's not the same one as your primary account information for the application, just in case we need to get a hold of you and that primary email address isn't being checked as frequently. Of course, we know that when you create your account, you're going to use an email address that you're checking frequently in case we need to get a hold of you for any questions or clarifications or, you know, updates to your application status and that kind of thing. We also ask you for your emergency contact information. That helps us later on in the process. And then that takes us to our academic and professional information page. So this is getting closer to the more fun stuff. So this is more about you professionally. So your title and how long you've been in that role, your institution. So you'll want to type that in here. I've already filled this in, but let me show you. If I were going to type in my institution, you just type it right into that box and it should appear. If it doesn't, just go ahead and continue typing and it'll overwrite whatever is popping up. So if it weren't showing up here, you can just use that as a regular text box. And then you'll enter your full school name, your department name if that is applicable, and the rest of the information here. Again, the country pops up first and then the rest of the address information. Then here's where you'll enter or upload, rather, your CV. It is a document that has to be uploaded. It's no more than 6 pages. I know some of our applicants have CVs and resumes that are longer, so just make sure that it's no more than 6. And we also recognize that many of our administrators, their CVs aren't quite 6 pages. And that's okay. Just make sure that it really really demonstrates your experience and the roles and everything as it applies to this program. So you use the prompts here to upload one. I already have a test one here. So if I were to delete that, or I can't really add another, but this will allow you to see how exactly I do that. So if I wanted to add one, I would use just a regular, it looks like any other, you know, program where you're uploading documents to an application. And then you would choose upload, and then it'll appear here. So if you need to replace this, if you realize, oh goodness, I meant to upload my CV here, but I've actually uploaded my statement of intent, that will, you know, check that file name, make sure it's the one that you want it to be. You can click on preview, or you can also click on delete if you need to replace it, and then just repeat the process to upload it. The employment eligibility just asks basically if you have employment with the Department of State or the U.S. Agency for International Development between you and your immediate family. So take a closer look at that question, make sure that you're eligible there. And then you go into the next section, which is awarded degrees. So enter your degree information here and your accomplishments. There's a 700 character limit in this text box. It will let you know how many characters you have left, as you can see, and that includes spaces and punctuation. So you may want to draft that in Word before copying it in here. Just make sure that it's characters and not words. That's a really big difference in terms of where that cutoff will be in what you're trying to say. Okay, so experience abroad and prior Fulbright grants. If you have any experience abroad that's 3 months, 3 consecutive months or longer, you'll want to upload or rather enter that here. And if I click on the Add Experience Abroad, you'll see here the questions that ask you, you know, where it was, why were you abroad, the dates, and how long it was. And you'll enter that for each trip. Again, it's like 3 consecutive months or longer. And that has to do with an eligibility requirement. So if you've resided abroad for 5 or more consecutive years in the 6-year period preceding the date of application, you would be ineligible from applying. So this helps us to make sure that you're eligible. Prior Fulbright grants, again, it's the same process. You'll click on Add New, and then you can add the type of award it was. So maybe you received an ETA grant. Maybe it was to Taiwan, and it was in, 2010, and then you just click on Save here, and that's what that looks like. Now, if I wanted to delete that, I think, go up to there, to the home, and then you can basically clear all of that. I basically hit Control and then my mouse button to clear that. So, or you can just hit Delete. So, yes, I want to hit Delete on that. And that way just the one is shown. Okay, so if you have received a Fulbright grant previously, particularly a Fulbright Scholar grant, we're asking that you provide a brief justification of this new application for this additional grant here in the application form. Okay, so moving on to the project details. This gets really into the fun stuff. So this is where you'll enter your academic discipline, or actually I would enter, in this case, your professional discipline. Here, I'm happy to say that our discipline list is pretty long in that it includes international education. If that's not your actual discipline, just go ahead and enter the one that's appropriate for you. You can enter other specializations here as well. And then the activity, you'll click on Seminar, and then you can upload your Statement of Intent. Here I haven't uploaded one yet. I will note if your document is longer than 5 pages that you're uploading, it will let you know that you need to replace it with one that meets the 5-page limit. Okay, and that Statement of Intent, I know the CV is pretty clear, but the Statement of Intent is a little bit different, and this is really where you get to explain what it is that you want to do, the purpose of you participating in this program, what you'll get out of the experience, what your institution will get out of this experience, and to really tell the story here. And I'll show you a little bit more in terms of the requirements on our homepage in just a sec. There's also an institutional statement that you'll upload to your application, and this is information about your home institution, particularly the kind of institution, the enrollment, the number of degrees offered, and so on and so forth, as well as the number of international students on campus and where they're coming from. If you're applying, it says here, if you're applying for the programs in Japan or Korea, you want to include the number of Japanese or Korean students currently on your campus. And there's additional points here, too, that you'll want to make sure to address in this 2-page document. So you don't have to go to the application to find these requirements. You can actually find them on our website. So if I were to go back to our homepage again and then go to the Programs tab and then go to U.S. Scholars and then gently navigate over to IEA Seminars, you can click on Application. And then each of these will expand to explain what they should contain. So that statement of intent here says that it needs to, you need to talk about your responsibilities, the impact that that your participation would have, why you've chosen this country, and so on. So I would keep keep the website open while you're working on everything, and then you can upload it all to the application. Of course, you can do it all kind of in pieces, that's totally fine. But know that these resources are here for you in advance of you actually opening the application. Okay, so that institutional statement we described here further, as well as the CV or resume. And you can just click on those or hide them as needed. I do want to highlight here that institutional statement is not needed for the Russia Community College Administrator Seminar Award, but it is for all the others. And the CV and the statement of intent are required for all of the programs within the IEA program. Okay, so let's go back over to the application. We've seen these. You'll need to upload those documents. And then we'll also give you an opportunity to indicate whether or not you would be willing to consider other or be considered for other awards. Now, I want to highlight that this is a very infrequently used field in terms of responses. So it's not so much to get your hopes up. We really want you to focus your application and tailor it to the award that you've selected. And we'll kind of take it from there in terms of that consideration. And it's pretty infrequent that information gets used. But it is helpful on that rare occasion. Okay, so coming towards the end, we're getting close. We have the recommendations and the language evaluations. I'm happy to say that the IEAs do not need any kind of language evaluation. Regardless of what country you're going to, you don't need to be fluent or even conversant in the local language. English will be just fine. The meetings and everything will be in English, and where needed, they'll provide translators. So you don't have to worry at all about the language evaluation, but you do need to provide recommendations. So what you'll do here is read through the instructions, and then you'll want to add a recommender or evaluator. So in this case, you'll click on Add, and then select the type of letter of recommendation. So don't choose the language evaluation. And then you'll click on the appropriate prefix and complete all of this information. It's all required. And then you can also add a personal message to your recommender. So you can, you know, if you're emailing, you know, Professor Smith, you can say, "Dear Professor Smith, you know, I'm applying for this program. I really, you know, appreciate your support for it. This is what I'm thinking about, you know, how it's all going to, you know, pull together." Or, you know, maybe not so much professor, but maybe you're asking, you know, one of your senior administrators to comment on your application and to provide that letter of reference or recommendation for you. So that will allow you to provide them with a little bit more information. We do encourage you to let them know, give them a heads up beforehand so that they know to expect that email, which will come automatically from our application system. And here we'll ask you to waive or not waive your access to the information, sign, and then hit send to recommender. And then that will generate an email that goes directly to them to say, you know, please complete this and upload it directly to our application system. It works much like the way that we're used to seeing, you know, recommendation requests for students applying for graduate school. Now, if you need to change this, change a recommender's information, or you realize that, oh, this person isn't going to be available and you need to remove their information, go ahead and click on Edit here. And you can see that I've already done this, where I have used this example and I've excluded them from consideration. So that means that in this case, the person that I had identified is no longer able to do this, so I wanted to replace them. So I've excluded them from consideration so I can add a new person to replace them as a recommender. Okay, so you'll need three recommendations for your application. You can request those today if you want to and create your application. You can request those as you're completing your application. We do recommend that you have your references. You know, all of that's all nice and tidy, and they're all submitted by the application deadline. We definitely want you to have your recommendations in before the application deadline. When you actually request them is really up to you. You can do that while you're working on the application. They can submit while you're still working on it. You can also go ahead and submit, and then they can submit their recommendations after you've submitted. The thing is, we really need those three recommendations in order to consider your application in the next phases of the review process. So that's where we really want to make sure that you've got three at the deadline, whether you've submitted weeks ago or whether you're submitting at the same time is really up to you. Personally, I'd recommend, getting all of it taken care of as much in advance as possible, just so you're not worrying about those last-minute little things the day that the application is due. But we also know that many applicants, that isn't always the reality. So just keep this So moving on in the application, lost track of thought there. So moving on the application, we're looking at the data privacy. In this case, you'll want to read through here and be aware of how your information is being used, which is safely and securely and fairly, of course. And that takes us to the signature page. And in this case, you'll type in your name, and it'll indicate the date that you've signed it. So you'll want to do this probably last in terms of when you are completing your application. But definitely read to this paragraph. It's asking you, to certify that you've honestly and accurately completed your application. And then the application after that will do a check of all of the fields to make sure that it's complete. So you saw that I was kind of moving quickly through the application, and I didn't enter information in all of the fields and upload all the documents that I needed to, so it flagged them here for me to go back to. So, for example, I'm missing the institutional statement, so if I click on that, I can go back to this page and upload my institutional statement. And then once I've done that, I go back to the review page, and then that will disappear off of this list. Clearly, it hasn't yet, but that will disappear off of this list, and then eventually all of these things will be done, and you'll be able to submit the application. You can also click to preview the application, so you can save a PDF of the application for your reference, and that can be helpful just for your own information and records. And then you'll want to, again, be sure to actually submit the application. We can't consider it if it's not actually submitted, so just make sure that you take that final step. So ultimately, you'll want to prepare an application package that clearly describes your plans and your goals, that demonstrates your preparation and your background and your experience. Again, we have a lot of guidance on our website, what goes into these supporting documents, so we encourage you to spend some time working on those materials before you apply. But let's talk a little bit more about what comes after the application. Okay, so the review process and timeline, as you can see, it varies depending on the award. Each of our awards has a different timeline. So if I go back over to our, let's see, which tab did I leave this off on? Here we are. Okay, so if I go back to our IEA homepage and click on timeline, you'll be able to see that each program has a little bit different timeline. So India's deadline is August 1, Taiwan is September 16th, and so on and so forth. So if we were to open up all of these, you can see that it varies. And that means that the timeline and the timeline is going to vary. The process will be the same, just the timing will change. So in this case, India's deadline is August 1, with a seminar taking place in the following March. And you can see that shifts a little bit later for each of our programs, depending on where you're looking at going. So let's go back to this process. Okay, so you submit the application for the application deadline. We will do a technical review of the application to make sure you follow the directions and that you're eligible and everything is complete and there as it needs to be. You may hear from us if it's not. Next, your application will be reviewed by a peer review panel of experts, where applicants are either recommended or not recommended for further consideration, and you'd be notified of this outcome at that stage. So applications that are recommended following the peer review process, the next stage is multi-pronged. That means there's an in-country review, the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board reviews, and the U.S. Department of State reviews. And all three of those pieces need to be in hand before we can notify applicants of the final outcome, whether or not they've been selected for a grant or named an alternate. So you might be wondering what criteria are used to evaluate the applications in the review process and how many applications we get and all that kind of fun stuff. So let's go back over to our program page, and we'll click on the review criteria. And you can see here the criteria that are used to evaluate the applications. I strongly encourage you to take a look at these. We don't actually divulge the application numbers or program stats in the way of for selection information. I can say that, you know, it definitely takes some time to put together a strong application, and it certainly, I think, working with your administration at your institution can be very valuable, especially when looking at the review criteria to see, you know, what will the impact look like? How broad and sustainable will it be at the institution? And so on and so forth, that you'll really want to craft the application, the whole package, to meet the guidelines, to address the criteria, and to let it be, you know, let it be as strong as possible. One of the things to note is that each of these seminars, the in-country process is really neat, and one that honestly I'd love to be a fly on the wall to see, because the in-country process involves, you know, looking at all of those recommended applications and saying, okay, what is going to make the best fit for this whole cohort? So it may be that there's 10 grantees for this program, and they're looking to make sure that there's a good mix of people coming from different institutions and different parts of the country and different roles. So, for example, let me go back to this directory page, and I'll click on, let's see, since we're using India as an example for the others, for the application, let me click on that, and then the academic year, let me click on 17-18, and then I'll search, so you can search by year. Okay, well, that doesn't look right. Okay, so let's take another look at this for a different year. It's so neat. I mean, some of our participants have mentioned that what they learned in the seminar experience was invaluable, not only in terms of the exposure to the higher education system in that host country, but also from their fellow participants, that the cohort overall was just really thoughtfully brought together to really represent a lot of different perspectives that many found it to be a highly engaging program. And I'm sorry, the directory is not working for us right now. Let's see, Scholar. Let's try it this way. Well, the short version is that you can actually search by, so you can search by year. So let's see, that's 14-15. Now I'm just being persistent about finding this information for you all. Okay, so for instance, you can see that we have a good variety of institutions. We have, you know, big institutions. We have smaller places from the East Coast to the West Coast and between. If I click on the next page, you can really see the variety. And it changes from year to year. So if you're not successful one year, you know, certainly consider reapplying the next year. I mean, these are competitive. Again, they're also looking for that fit and that balance and that kind of right mix of people for the cohort. So that's where, you know, reapplying, I've definitely seen where that's been successful for a number of applicants. So sometimes it just takes a little patience, which I know can be hard. But again, you can see here that you've got, you know, some smaller colleges, liberal arts colleges, that really ranges in terms of that program participation. So we're happy to work with you if you do, if you aren't successful and do want to reapply, that we're looking, you know, we're looking overall, the process is looking for that cohort and that fit and that balance and those strengths, meeting all the criteria. So those who are reviewing your application really want you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to participate effectively in the seminar, that your rationale for applying to this particular country is sound and supported by your institution, that it will have a broad and sustainable impact at your institution, and that you're adaptable and culturally sensitive. You need to show that you've really done your homework to prepare for the seminar. You'll also want to remember that your application will be read by peers from institutions across the U.S. and hopefully those in the host country. This means that your application needs to be clear, concise, and compelling, preemptively answering any questions that a reviewer might have. So those reading your application may not be familiar with your institution in depth to really understand some of the specific context or contextual nuances at your institution or some aspect of it. So you'll want to make sure that you're connecting those dots for those reviewers rather than having them come to their own conclusions, which might not be the same conclusion you intended. So having a colleague or two read your statement of intent before submitting it can be especially helpful and something that alumni have recommended as being, you know, that was really helpful for them, and they certainly recommend others to do the same. So again, that directory can be super helpful to reach out to people to hear about their experience and how they, you know, built their application and what, you know, what their experience was and so on. So in terms of the format of the different documents, it's really up to you. I mean, resumes, you know, are typically on the, you know, more bulleted format. I would say the other documents, the statement of intent is usually much more essay-like. The institutional statement can be, I mean, there's more kind of chunks of information. So I would say it's really up to you in terms of the format, as long as it's clear and well organized and reads and has good flow to it, that it's really up to you as to how it's actually presented. We've seen a variety of different formats, and we want you to do what's going to work best and what represents you best. Okay, so I want to highlight that one of the primary aims of Fulbright is to send abroad a cohort of people who represent the diversity of U.S. cultures at large abroad. And again, alumni, I've been kind of harping on this, but alumni really can be a terrific resource for you. And that directory, as much as it was vexing me a moment ago, is where you'll find that searchable alumni list. So just be patient with it, and if you can't find something, just keep at it. Or reach out for sure, and we can help with that as well. So in terms of application resources, the catalog of awards is a really great place to start. Our website, of course, I've been showing you a little bit about that and where to find information there. Webinars such as this one, we'll have others on the individual IEAs coming down the pike for you to take a listen to. We'll, of course, archive these so they're accessible to you after the fact, and so you can listen to those. Good, you know, nighttime listening, put you right to sleep. We also have our, you know, the catalog of awards and so on. So there's lots of resources here for you. I'm happy to answer questions. So if you have more questions, you're welcome to use that questions box. And I can do my best to answer those in the time that we have remaining. While you're thinking about some questions, I wanted to highlight one program that's part of the Fulbright program, but not one that you might be aware of. So we have approximately 900 Fulbright visiting scholars in the U.S. for teaching and/or research every year. And we have this really neat program called the Outreach Lecturing Fund that provides an opportunity for these Fulbright visiting scholars to travel to different parts of the U.S. to meet and lecture and exchange ideas with faculty and students and community organizations and even visit K-12 schools. So say you're in Albuquerque and you'd love to host a scholar for a short-term visit, but they're in Maine, and maybe the airfare is a little bit pricey, especially given department budgets these days. This is where this Outreach Lecturing Fund program can help. The application for this travel grant is pretty short and institutionally driven, and it's a really great way to internationalize your campus and your curriculum, and to bring a scholar to your classroom and community. And we have a lot of information on this on our website. It's the Outreach Lecturing Fund, and we the idea is that we'll help to cover some of the travel costs to get them to your campus, to help to give them a really great experience while they're in the U.S. So many of our scholars come and they don't necessarily fully appreciate the size of the U.S. and how it can be a big country to navigate in terms of getting around and being able to see more of it. And it really allows them to see a lot more, and it allows you and your faculty and your students to really see a different or hear from a different perspective as well. So that's my plug while I look to see if more questions have been entered. So feel free to keep on typing in, and if we don't have questions, we can certainly end early. That's okay. We're coming up on our time anyway. Okay, I don't see too many more questions coming in. I'm always afraid there's someone typing and just hit enter, and we can read the rest of the question. I just want to make sure that we don't cut you off too soon before we close. If you do have a question after the webinar ends and you realize, oh my gosh, I should have asked, feel free to email us. That iea@iie.org address is does have a real person behind it. My colleague Sarah is a wonderful resource, and we will be in touch as soon as we can to help answer any questions. We will be putting together a document that kind of walks you through the application instructions, like a PDF to go up in the application section of our website. That will be coming. So you'll have this, and you'll have that PDF, this recording rather, and that PDF to help get you through the application. Again, it should be pretty straightforward. If you encounter any issues or any questions, feel free to give us a shout. But I did want to thank you all for joining us this afternoon. I'd like to reiterate that applications are encouraged from our administrators. I'm happy, very happy that these awards are available because it's such an important piece of our program and of our work broadly in international education. And we see that the program represents the many types of institutional affiliations in all of the different fields and all over the country. So please go ahead and use those resources on our website and contact us to work with you to present a competitive application. Remember again that review process has multiple stages, where your application will be read by experts and non-experts alike, and it does have to make it through that peer review process before it can proceed to the in-country review. So finally, thank you for taking the time again this afternoon. Take a look at our website, and we look forward to hearing from you and assisting you with your application.